Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 308. And today, a change to the scheduled entertainment. Is that what they say on TV when things change? I'm joined today by Rob Alton. I know I said last week that this week's episode was going to be Rosie Marcel, but we've had some slight issues with some kind of exclusive stuff and news that is broken on that episode that it's kind of been realized that we might not be allowed to break just yet. So we're looking at, rather than, like, we don't want to edit it, so we're looking at when we can release it so that we can keep it raw. But we might have to edit something down the line, I don't know. But instead this week, as said, we've got Rob Alton. And any of you who've followed me for a long time will know that Rob Alton is one of my favorite humans in the world. Rob Alton is a poet and comedian. Whenever I go to the Edinburgh Fringe, his is the one show that I have to catch. If I can only catch one show, it will be Rob's. I love him, and I love his mind, and I love this conversation that we had. But before we get into it, I'm going to give you a little treat, because I've not cleared this with Rob at all, or with Ben at Plosive. But Rob was on was part of a multi-episode a year or two ago, and I've been wanting to have him on to have a full chat with him for ages, and he's turned me down a few times, even though he's a mate, and I've released At Home with Rob Alton, which is a CD or digital download poetry album at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. But he's not fancied it up until now, or he's not felt it was the right time. But now is the right time, because on January 1st, 2020, Rob Alton started the Rob Alton Daily Podcast. And it's exactly as it sounds. It's a podcast every day for this whole year. And the cool thing is that they're only, because that might, you might think, I've not got time for to listen to the same person every day. But it's, they're like 2-3 minute long poems. Some of them are longer. Like, we talk about it a bit in the podcast, but it's not the sole thing that we talk about. That's the reason we're doing it now, but it's not the sole thing that we talk about. We recorded this just before Christmas. Or was it in between Christmas and New Year? I think it was just before Christmas. And we had a really good chat, man. It was beautiful. In fact, actually, we talk about it. We recorded it the day after the election result came in. But we don't talk about politics loads either, but we talk about the world and outlooks and everything. It's honestly, it's one of my favorite chats, and you're gonna love it. But because of the podcast being out, and as I said, we do talk about it a bit, but I wanted to give you a real taste of what it is, because it's been a highlight of my year. Obviously, when we're talking about it on the podcast, I've not heard any of it yet, but listening to Rob's podcast, I listen every morning. I download it, and at some point in the morning, I take a couple of minutes to take it in. And it's like, yeah, it's a beautiful mood enhancer. So I wanted to play you one of them. I've not cleared this with Rob or with Ben at Plosive. Ben, the producer, also does Off Menu. Yeah, it's great. So we will go into the podcast, but before we drop the theme tune, this is, let me have a look at which one I should play, because they've, as said, I'm not even kidding, they've been my absolute highlight. So we're going to give you the poem, because it jumps straight into the poems. So yeah, we're going to give you episode 6 from January 6th, and it's called Water Again. And this all, because I know that people often listen, or there's more, I'm rambling so much, you're going to have skipped this. There's more listeners at the first half of a podcast than there is at the last half, because of the nature of journeys and so on and so forth. So I wanted to give you a sample of this, and then hear our conversation, hear Rob explain it, hear his beautiful mind at work. So this is episode 308 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, but before that, this is a little grab. I mean, it's the whole episode. This episode was 3 minutes long. So yeah, this is episode 6 of the Rob Alton Daily Podcast.
Water Again. What is water? Water is the smell of a pint of orange cordial before you've added the cordial. Similar in taste to the broken pelvis of a melted snowman. The backbone of a snowflake. The unsalted tear of a poodle. The elbow of a puddle. The heartbeat of all wetness. Ground softener for the trowels. Purpose giver to the towels. Transporter of pills. Can't travel up hills. Spacious housing estate without walls for some lucky, lucky fish. Sometimes gives people a license to throw a coin in and make a wish. Mother Nature's womb for the frog spawn. Wet film set for the frog's pawn. Water, something for the ducks to have a little float on. Somewhere for a pirate to sail a little boat on. Water, hype man for the bubble bath. Pop, 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 pop. Guaranteed to make the babies laugh. Bath time equals laugh time. Yeah, when you're young. Not so much anymore for me. I have showers, I don't have toys. Me standing still in the shower holding a yellow plastic duck would just be sad now. When I was little, I got put in the bath with my sister and my cousins. I don't know how. Water, arch enemy of the Dyson Airblade. Gave a home to a Disney mermaid. Ariel. Ariel mixed with water makes your clothes clean. If you've got a washing machine, water. The driving force behind all damp and rust. If you paint a picture of the earth from space, include the blue bits, yes you must. Transparent, temperamental, faceless monster that will take your life if you give it chance. On the other hand, inspires quite creative things like the 1994 Eurovision Song Contest interval performance of the River Dance. Water. Playground for the dolphins. I saw the list of the top 100 things to do before you die for dolphins. Swim with humans was not on it. Number one on the list was meet flipper. Water. The opposite of pastry. Soup for people who don't like ingredients or soup. Oil rejector, plant erector, thirst corrector. Without water, we'd be eating tea bags. Would we? What would a cup of tea be if water didn't exist? Tea bag in a mug. Would there be a mug? No. Would there be a tea bag? No. Would there be a kettle? No. Would there be a work surface? No. Without water, what would there be? A need for water.
I am recording, and let me just say, the red bit is the front, so if you have that in your direction in general. Yeah. I'm here with Rob Alton. How are you, sir?
All right, Pip, how are you?
I'm good, and it's exciting because this, I realised on the way over, this is the exact microphones and mixing desk and everything that we recorded your spoken word album on.
Yeah, yeah.
That I turned up at your house.
Yeah.
I set it all up.
Yeah.
And then I went to see a film, I think.
Did you?
Yeah. And then I came back and you'd finished an album.
Yeah, I know. I recognise them actually since I've just seen a logo on the front of it. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. That was great, that. And I took a picture of the microphones and, yeah, loved it.
It was weird, wasn't it? I enjoyed that because that was, I did one with Polar Bear as well.
Yeah.
Because I think spoken word is something that it's tough to capture on recording.
Mm.
I've not heard that many great recordings of live gigs that really capture the live gig, but it was Polar Bear's idea to do one just sitting in his living room and make it that you're not trying to capture live gig. You're just going, here's my poems.
Yeah, brilliant.
And it worked amazingly. And I thought yours did as well, because it's just, it makes it more conversational and intimate.
I think the best thing about that was that it's not often where you get to just sit down on your own and read your own book out to yourself.
Yeah.
It kind of tests you to see whether you like your own stuff or not.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. If you can kind of get onto the front line of yourself and be and say, okay, right, how much do I like this? If you're going to sit down for what, like 80 minutes with your own books and just read your own stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just you in the room. And the thing is that what, I mean, it's happened to me a few times where I end up just saying, oh yeah, I do like this actually.
Yeah.
I do like these, what I've written. And I guess that's maybe because a lot of the stuff that I have ideas for and do write down, there's a lot that get chucked away.
Right.
So it's only the ones that, well, it's weird, isn't it? You know, when you have an idea and you think it's going to stand the test of time, you know, they normally, so they do. I'm not saying I'm not that old, but I mean, I've been doing it for 10 years. So if I've been doing, I don't know. Right, you're going to have to cut that bit.
No, it's fine. We can leave that in. I think you're completely right, though, because it makes you realise what you like about your own stuff and what has motivated you to write that stuff rather than just what an audience responds to.
Yeah.
And with spoken word in particular, I always remember talking to Kate Tempest about this, and or Musa Rotwanga was a great example as well. They both had really good outlooks on how stagecraft can be a safety net.
Mm.
Because if you deliver it in a certain way, it can cover up if it's not that good.
Yeah.
And if you end on a that was a really good bit type delivery, then people sometimes just believe it without actually listening and going, was that good? Or have I just been caught up in the performance of the way you've ended it that I'm like, yes, that was amazing. And I think that reading it to yourself, for yourself in a way, makes you go, well, that bit was good, but the other bit, I've been tricking them on that. I've been making them believe that was better than it is.
Yeah, which is half the battle, isn't it? But the thing is with, I've got so many memories from different gigs of just, I remember I was doing a gig in at Edinburgh in the Roundabout venue.
Yeah.
It's like a spaceship inside. And I was doing this piece and I can remember it so vividly. I was saying it the same way that I'd said it before, but I was thinking about something else in my head. So I wasn't even bothered whether the audience were there or not.
Yeah.
And it got so much more of a reaction.
Right.
Like they would, it wasn't like a massive like cheering or whatever, but they just laughed in such a different way.
Wow.
And that's what does my head in so much about it, because every time you stand up on stage, you're not really in control.
No.
Because it's all so fluid and it's like, and you're like, well, I'm going to try, but I might start thinking about this. And then there's all the thing of like, what are the audience going to do? What are they going to be thinking about?
Yeah.
So you're like, right, okay, well, it's all up for grabs. So here we go. Let's just try it. And I was saying this thing, and because I think it was because I wasn't trying to be funny, or I wasn't like spelling it out for them. It was just like a throwaway comment.
Yeah.
But because the idea that I had was strong enough, maybe they were like, they wanted to come to me.
Yeah.
Because I had no investment in the delivery of it whatsoever.
Yeah.
They were like, no, actually, what you've just said is good. So here you go. We want to let you know that stuff that you're not bothered about, which I totally am. But yeah. It was just that. And I'm sure you have memories of gigs where you're just like, why are they reacting like that?
Yeah.
Or they can like all be crossing their arms and like, no, come on. I'm doing exactly the same as I did last night. And that was a really good one. And this is crap.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I'm going to have to stop saying like. But it is the way. That is the way of it. And that's the thing with live performance for me, is that it just is an untamable beast.
Yeah.
But I guess the more you do it, and the, you know, I'm going into next year, I'm going to be doing a lot of gigs, and I know that some of them are going to be all right, some of them are going to be really bad, and some of them, hopefully, the audience will have a good time and I'll have a good time, and they'll both match up.
Yeah.
But that's very rare, that, isn't it?
It's what keeps it interesting, though, and people often ask, like, when I used to tour a lot, and particularly with music, because of the way we worked, it wasn't a live band. It was Dan Lesac doing it all live, but still it had to be in order. we'd play the same set list most nights on this particular tour.
Yeah.
And people would be like, well, does that not get boring? It's like, no, because it's a different crowd every night.
Mm.
They're reacting in different places. It feels different. If you can keep yourself in tune with that. Again, the problem, I think, with touring can be that you do get into that automated process and you're no longer aware. But that's the beautiful thing that you just described, that one of the times you got into that and you were just churning that line out the way you've churned it out every time, the audience is still there to go, no.
Mm.
It's not just the same. We're different. It's not the same as last night. It's not the same as the night before.
Yeah.
And that's got its positives and its negatives, because as you say, you can absolutely nail it and not get the reaction.
Yeah.
And that must be hard, or harder, when you've got comedy elements.
Yeah.
Because then the reaction to music is far more bland. It's cheer or don't cheer.
Mm.
Whereas the reaction to comedy is a huge variation of laughters, types of laughter, no laughter,
yeah,
giggles, smirks.
Mm.
And that's a tougher thing to
Yeah, isn't it? I think that's balance. Interesting what you're saying about being in tune with it. Like, because when you are, it's very difficult. Say if I'm a musical instrument, say a guitar, I don't know whether I'm in tune or not.
Yeah.
And you just stand up in front of an audience, and some days I go on stage and I feel like shit, and I'm probably, a bit out of tune. But unfortunately, I don't really know how to... You can't just change a few, like, twiggle your ears a bit and get yourself in tune. You've just got to... I think that's what I was saying about it all being just up for grabs and a risk and so fluid, is that because of the humanity of us all, when a good gig is good and I feel like the audience, myself and the audience, go on a journey together, it's such a... It just feels like magic, because the chances of that happening are really slim.
Yeah.
And especially when with comedy and things like that, because it's almost like an obstacle course when they're doing all that thing on, Takeshi's Castle?
Yeah.
Where you need to jump onto a platform, and if you just make it, like, it's about the skin of your teeth, or you just make it to the next sentence without someone coughing or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're like, yes, boom, 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 right, we'll get to this bit. And like Tarzan, like swinging from the vines, you know, like going, if I can get to this bit, I'll get to this bit, I'll get to this bit, I'll get to this bit. And that was it. When I started doing longer shows, or hour-long shows, when I would try and lift the audience up at the start and then get to the end and then drop them at the end. But to keep that energy up,
yeah,
it's just brutal, isn't it? It's really difficult.
It really is. And that Takeshi's Castle analogy is a great one. I also think I always would watch Ninja Warrior.
Right.
Is one of the ones I'd watch. And the first obstacle looks quite easy. Not easy, but easier than some of the ones that are to come.
Mm.
And it always feels the more heartbreaking when people slip on that one. Because it's like you've almost discarded that. And that can be the same with live. You know that it is this series of obstacles, but you could slip on that first one. And it's like, how did I slip on that?
Yeah.
That's kind of... Now it's over.
Totally, yeah.
Now it's done, and I've just got to get through the rest of this. I've slipped on that first bit that's the easy bit that I know so well.
Exactly.
But because I was so focused on the salmon ladder or the rings of doom or whatever, because I was so focused on that later on, I've slipped on the bit that I know that is my bread and butter that I've been doing for years, and it's all gone.
That is one of the most infuriating things, when you've got a bit and you know it's coming up, and you just throw it in a different way and the audience don't catch it, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, damn, what was I thinking? Then what was I thinking about? Why couldn't I? But then I think back to that thing where I wasn't thinking, it went okay. And then the spontaneity of the moment as well. And just when little glimpses happen, and you, one of the most poisonous things that I can get in my brain is, oh, this is going to be funny, I'm going to say this. Because if you do that, then you're just a bit of a smart ass, really.
Yeah.
It's like being in a conversation with your friends around a table in a pub, and you try and make a smart joke. People are just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This isn't in the moment. What, have you prepared that?
Are you performing?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, that's the thing. Because when people go to your show, when people go to the shows, they're like, "What are you? Are you just showing off? This doesn't seem very authentic."
Yeah.
And whereas it's so difficult to get past that and to work so hard with the material to I've got a photo of something where it says to express, not to impress.
Yeah.
And I stand by that. Like, you just got to try and get what's inside of you outside.
Yeah.
Instead of going, look what I've got, everybody.
It's weird that you mention that, because I was listening to a podcast yesterday, a Brett Goldstein's Films to Be Buried With podcast, which I love. It's on the network. And I messaged him to say it was one of my favourites. It was with a comedian called Fergus Craig, who I wasn't aware of, but I said it was one of my favourites. And Brett was a bit surprised, because it's not the biggest name on there. It's someone who's good, but he kind of pushed me on it. It was like, why did you like it? I want to know what. And the thing that I came to was that they were making each other laugh, but neither of them was showing off or trying to perform. They were just, it was just really nice, two mates talking and just being on the same wavelength. And I love hearing people amuse each other. It's one of the most beautiful things, is laughter, is genuine laughter. And the thing that made it so compelling as a standout episode was, yeah, it wasn't, I'm going on a podcast, I've got my bits, I've prepared my moments. Doing? So it was that. It was just, here it was, just two guys just going, and it was really funny. I laughed loads, but that was the beauty of the laughter. It wasn't that, those moments.
Yeah, it's funny with podcasts, though, isn't it? Because I'm not kind of sat here thinking, I've got my bits, but I'm trying to think of things. Well, I'm not trying to think of things to say, but you've got to say something, haven't you?
It's a weird balance, man, because I also only realised in recent years, it was after watching a show called Nathan For You, it kind of highlighted to me that the thing that people are meant to do on TV shows, on late night shows and stuff like that, the big Hollywood stars have their anecdotes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they go out and they'll do it on Jimmy Kimmel, and then they'll come over here and they'll do the same anecdote on Graham Norton. And they're perfectly right to do so. Do you know what I mean? If you're in that, in front of that big an audience, it's fair to go, here's my funny story. It feels completely alien to me, and I've never had any of that. But I can also see, yeah, the complete reason. If Graham Norton has 3 million viewers, if you were doing a gig and you had 3 million people going to be there, you probably would have prepared something.
Yeah,
you probably would have gone, I know some stuff that's going to work. So it's alien to me, but I also understand it, so I can't get that mad at it. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, isn't it? What you say about, I did a gig at the Cheltenham Literature Festival, and afterwards lady said, oh, is this bit in this book? And I was like, what? She said, this piece, is that on there? I've got it on my office wall. And I'd never paid that piece of writing any attention, really, since I read it and liked it enough to want to put it in a book. But then I read it and I thought, oh yeah, I could see what she maybe got out of it.
I love it. It's something that's always interested me with you is what your relationship is with what you do. I feel, because again, for people who don't know, you kind of came up through spoken word, but there's comedy in there and you moved into comedy. It felt to me as if you were reluctant to call what you do comedy just for fear of expectation. Every show I've seen of yours has, I mean, again, it's a rare, I've noted it on here. You're the only person I can think of that every time I've seen you, I've laughed loads and I've cried every time. Every time I've been to one of your shows, I've cried. And that's at times going, he's not going to get me this time. I know how it works. I know what's going on. And it's got me. Every time it's got me emotionally. But what's been your kind of journey on that? Because it feels now you're at a place where you're more comfortable knowing what you are and what you do than you maybe were 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. I'm starting to write a new show now about crowds called The Crowd Show. And that will be just coming from the same place, really, of sitting down, trying to think of an idea. No, putting a word in the middle of a spider diagram. So since 2000, for people listed who have never seen me or anything like that, then, which will obviously be the vast majority, but there's since 2012, I've gone up to the Edinburgh Festival and done a show on each. I did a show all about the colour yellow, then I did a show all about the sky, then faces, then water, then sleeping, then hair, then talking, then time, and now I'm doing a new show about crowds. And every time it's just sit down, what do I want to write about? And because I've done a few shows now, and a lot of the time my favourite parts of the show are when it's when I'm talking to the crowd and the ad-libbing and trying to make magic happen in the moment that could never have happened before. That's why I'm doing a new show about that. But on a more general point, I think I love not trying to make people laugh. I love making myself laugh. Yeah. And if I can make myself laugh, then I'm halfway there with it, really.
It's what I loved about the Time Show was it was the performance I saw of that.
Mm.
It was the most I'd felt I'd seen you making yourself laugh and enjoying yourself up there.
And
it was really, it was beautiful to see. Cause again, every time it's also the same, every time I've seen you, the reaction has been amazing. Like you were the second most highly reviewed show at the Fringe for the Sky Show?
The one before that. No, I did one.
The hair show.
No, I did one about talking.
The talk show.
And then the Time Show was the 13th. It's one, but it's I don't put that on the posters, but it was
again, I love that you get those stats, but they are always really highly reviewed. But I always know from knowing you personally that you do go through a lot of I don't know if it's good, I'm not sure how I feel about it, I'm not sure if the reactions are right.
Yeah,
because you care deeply about your shows
about it, yeah. I think
which is it's an unusual thing in comedy. It's quite cool in comedy to be whatever, I'm just going to do my thing if they don't get it or whatever else. But you, or who am I thinking of? Rich Wilson spoke about this. Like I chatted to him at the Fringe this year, and he spoke about admitting that he really gives a shit if people are there and if it goes well. And you're meant to not, you're meant to pretend you don't, but you're someone who from day one has been quite clear that no, I care about this. It really matters to me. This is my life, kind of thing.
It is, yeah. And I think the reason is because it's always come from an art project kind of way, really.
Yeah.
And for me, you've got to take art seriously. And I'm not saying it's art. I'm saying that if you sit down and create anything from scratch that didn't exist and it exists because you're alive, I think that that's art.
Yeah.
You've come up with it and you've created it. And I started laughing more in my shows, I think, because the older I get, the more absurd everything reveals itself to be. Like I thought when I was a child, you know, I've got some bits in my book. Like when I was little, I didn't know what a dog was. I still feel the same now. But I didn't know what a dog was, but I like them. I still feel the same way now. And what annoys me or what gets the fire that I need to want to keep traipsing around the country doing gigs, I love doing it, but there's no doubt about it, it is a slog, is just that feeling of how can everything be so normal? How can we all be so accepting of it? People should be in the streets like applauding the sun for us just being alive and us being so perfectly placed for us to exist at the same time as flipping avocados, and just be like, I can't get my head around all this stuff, like cows having eyes and tongues and legs and me having legs and, you know, humans recreating other humans and dogs having other dogs and blue tits having other blue tits. It's like, whoa, you know, and just trying to stay excited about that and just try to just go off on one and be like, look, this is magic. And no matter what, I mean, we said we weren't going to talk about it, but we are recording this the night after the election result.
Yeah.
And for those people to come into my life and pollute it,
yeah,
it just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
And And no, that's not just my political point of view. I don't think that there should be... Maybe it is this childlike thing of just thinking, I don't think people should kill each other with guns. And I don't think that rich people should be able to get away with some of the stuff they get away with. And I don't think people who lie should be in positions of power. Like when I was a little kid, I went through a stage of lying, right? And I think when I was about, 12 or something. No, it must have been about 14. My parents had a bottle of cider in the kitchen, and I would get home from school and drink a little bit. Maybe it was about 15. And I'm sure that they were saying, have you been drinking this? And I was like, no. Have you been drinking? And then some other found out that I did. And the biggest telling off I've ever had was for lying. Yeah. And they went in on me so hard that I just don't do it now.
Yeah.
It's just easier to... Even if it's a little thing, and I'm like, well, I could. But it's like, no, it's just better to be like, just tell the truth. And that's why I look at these politicians and think, why? Surely everyone wants everyone to be okay.
Yeah.
Like I walk around in the street and I'm like, are you okay? I don't say that to people, but it's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because I know that it's selfish, but I would feel safer if I thought that everyone was having an all right life.
Yeah, because
they wouldn't, all these people, like you see these people doing horrific crimes in the newspapers. And a lot of the time I just go back to, I start thinking about them as children, like when they were born and their parents holding them when they were little. And it's like Charles Bukowski says about, I'm not going to misquote it, but it is basically saying all these people were born with hope in mind, you know. And like it saddens me so much that the like, money, and I'm just thinking about just like we've got such a short amount of time here, and it seems to be that there's a very few amount of people who are intent on spoiling it. It's like, don't spoil it. When you see these like helicopter gunships and stuff like that, and Donald Trump talking about how he killed someone in a bunker and he was like crying like a dog and things like that, you're like, flipping heck, how out of hand has this got, and why has it got like this? And yeah, maybe, but it's just such a spiraling thing, and that is what drives me to want to create something that I believe has got worth to it and is good and is true. And that's why all the shows are about the sky, water, hair, sleeping, faces, time, talking, the color yellow, crowds, because it's not temporary. Like someone like, if I wrote a thing about Boris Johnson, in 20 years I'd look back at it and be like, ah, you're wasting your time. Why did you write that?
Yeah.
And whereas if I write something about the sky, I know that the sky's going to be there.
Yeah.
Wait, and that's the thing with the whole climate stuff. It's like, look, just, yeah. Anyway.
No, I love it. And it is that spiraling thing, and it's weirdly that outlook again, or the spiraling thing of people taking things for granted and anything, you know, it starts at small things, but then it goes to taking for granted that people are going to be homeless. Right. We shouldn't be taking that for granted, or taking for granted that people are going to be poor or people are going to have to be killed, all these other things. And I think that was the thing that first excited me when I saw you live, was hearing you talk about that excitement about things like dogs having eyes, nose, and a tongue, and you having eyes, nose, and a tongue, and it being genuine. I did photography at uni for a year, and I dropped out. I was in Wolverhampton. But the amount of people who would get confused by me, because I loved doing photography, but also it blew my mind, and it still blows my mind, that there was this thing that was there, and we've got this little box, and we press it, and we've captured that moment. Like, if light has reflected, we've captured that moment, and it's here, and we've got a document of it. And that genuinely was and still is mind-blowing to me. And I think because we've got cameras on our phones now and stuff like that, it doesn't mean a thing. But the thing that photo represents was a real-life thing. It was a real thing that you couldn't just grab. Like, you couldn't grab this whole living room, yet you've grabbed it and captured it in this picture. And stuff like that blows my mind. And I think it is that spiral of the more we take all of these things for granted, the more we can gloss over the horrific things, and they don't seem so bad. And Trump's a prime example of that. The first time he said something ridiculous, people were like, you can't say that. And then he said 30 more ridiculous things in that interview, and it started to become, and same with Boris, it's like, oh, it's Boris. Oh, he hid in a fridge to avoid an interview. Ah, Boris. So what?
Yeah.
It's mad that all those things can be taken for granted.
Yeah, I feel like we need some superheroes. And it's just, I don't know, I'm getting to a stage now where I've done Edinburgh a fair bit, and I've had some things happen in, like, when I've been working, where I thought, oh, that's good, that'll make me happy, that. Like, I don't know. Doing a short set on television.
Yeah.
On a satellite channel or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, I'd love to get on there. And then I did it, and I was pleased I did it, and it was challenging. And then I've started doing a tiny little bit of acting stuff. And I thought that, I mean, it is good to challenge yourself and to do things like that. But over the past maybe 3 or 4 years, one thing that I did that made me feel more was, I was outside, and I hope this isn't just one of the bits that you're like, he's got his bits. It isn't.
No, no,
this is, I was in Edinburgh, and I'd just been in FOP.
Yeah.
So it's on the other side of Princes Street. And outside Sainsbury's, there was a woman, and she was in a bad way, and she was asking for money. And I didn't have any change, but I went in and I walked past her and went into Sainsbury's. And the thing is, every time I see someone who's homeless or on the street, I feel like it should smack you between the eyes and force you into action.
Yeah.
But it doesn't for me. But she was behind me on the self-checkouts, and she'd got like a baguette and some, I don't know, I think like some lettuce and some cheese. And she was piling her coins into the self-service thing. And I just got a £5 note and just put it into the self-checkout.
Mm.
And then she looked at me and I was like, there you go. And then, you know, she had the money. And it wasn't much, but it was such a, the feeling I got from doing that. And that is, it's not in a selfish way. I wasn't just doing it to feel good. But the way that it made me feel was, oh, I want more of that. I'd like to help people.
Yeah.
And that's why, one of my girlfriend's friends does a thing, South London Cares, where they pair people up, young people with old people who don't have too many people in their lives anymore. And I'd love to do that. And I guess at the moment, like doing gigs and things like that is, I don't want to sound too worthy, but just try and do something good and give people an hour or something, where this crowd show, like, because the election went the way it did last night, I woke up and I was depressed, but I thought, right, I need to work twice as hard to make twice as good a show.
Yeah.
Just for myself.
Yeah.
Because the worse it gets and the more depressed I feel about the state of the world, you've got to be like, right, turn yourself on. And it's like Wayne Coyne says from the Flaming Lips, turn yourself on and turn yourself up as loud as it can go. Instead of trying to make it more palpable for everyone, just like get energized.
Yeah.
And get mobile and do it. Well, and just fill yourself and just try and be a good person. And I think that's it. It's like, it's got nothing to do with being popular or people trying to come and see your show. It's just like, right, I think I've been born with a certain amount of, I've got an ability to, I love writing. I love writing down ideas and being like, is this good? Is this good? Is this good? No, 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 no. Is this good? Well, that might work. I'll try that. Let's do that. Let's do that. And then it's just like trial and error, trial and error, trial and error. Right, let's do this. I'll go do it. Right, dies on its ass. Right, do it again, do it again, do it again. Try and get it to a point where you're just like, right, come on. And just testing yourself, isn't it? It's like you do a lot of exercise, don't you?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, I like the exercise.
Same with that. It's like, just pushing yourself.
Oh, I mean, you've stumbled onto something perfect there, because it ties into two things that I've weirdly, one of them I was thinking about on the drive over here today. But you say about pushing yourself and making change, and I think that can sound intimidating to people. It can sound like a lot of work.
Mm.
They've got a lot of other things to deal with, but it doesn't have to be.
No.
And the exercise thing is an easy example, because the thing that changed exercise for me was stop making it a choice. Just psychologically, I didn't go, oh, do I want to exercise today? I went, I've got to get my exercise done, and then I can get on with everything else. I stopped, like, it had to be done at some point.
Mm.
And if you've, I was saying this on one of the other podcasts recently, if you've worked in an office, if your boss tells you to do something, it just has to be done.
Yeah.
You don't go, oh, I don't want to do that. It's like, I need to get that done and then I can go with it. And that's some bloke that you don't care about and that is earning money more than you. Yeah, allow him to make you do that. And you can make similar change. And the reason it ties in, I was thinking on the train in, sorry, on the drive in, there's a guy, a homeless guy at Fenchurch Street Station. And I go into Fenchurch Street for London all the time. And when I've got some change, I give it to him. And he's a lovely guy. I've chatted to him a few times. He's a really nice dude. But he's always there. And I was thinking on this journey, I was like, I could make it the norm that I always give him £1 every time I go past. The same as it's a reflex now that I tap in and tap out at train stations. Mm. I don't think about that. I think, have I got 2 quid or 3 quid? Or can I afford it? Whatever. I do it because I have to. And that's the norm. And again, when I'm coming into Fenchurch Street, I've paid 16 or 17 quid for my ticket. I've not thought about, oh, can I can't. I've gone, I need to.
Yeah.
I'm going in. So it was that thing. I was like, well, I could make it an easy conscious thing that I need to have a quid. If I'm going past it, I need to have a quid to give to that guy.
Yeah.
That's the and a quid is nothing compared to the 16 quid the train company are ripping off me. And I think that we can all look at things like that that can just become our norms, and they won't make a huge difference on our life, but they could make a big difference on someone else's life, or a small difference on someone else's life.
Yeah.
But the more that we can do of that, I think the better. And I think the problem that a lot of us have, I've had a couple of different homeless charities on the podcast, and the problem a lot of people have is the bullshit propaganda that we've grown up with in kind of the 80s and 90s, the kind of you give them money, it'll only make it worse and stuff like that. There's been tests done, and Rutger Bregman talks about this. There's been countless tests done that all prove that's not the case. And there's always that, again, I'm sure it was a comedian I heard say it first, but he was like, yeah, but if you give them the whole, if you give them money, they're only going to spend it on booze. It's like, fair enough.
Mm.
They're living on the street.
Mm.
I'd probably want a drink or two at the end of each day. It's a fucking, particularly at that point, I don't drink at the moment, but I spend money on booze.
Yeah.
So why should I be judgmental on someone else who's in a worse situation than me, saying that some of that money is going to go on booze? Some of it will go on food as well and the stuff they need to survive. But this weird judgmentalness, and again, the bullshit of, oh, apparently there's scammers out there who are busking and then they go and stay in an expensive hotel room and stuff like that. It's like, number one, that's a fiction.
Mm.
They don't exist. But number two, if there is anyone doing that, that's a pretty shit situation too. That's a pretty desperate situation that is your life, that you're scamming people, you're pretending to be homeless to scam money. In that situation, have a quid, mate. Have my quid as well, because you are obviously, there's some bad shit going on in your life. And I think we get too judgmental on all that stuff and try and find these reasons and justifications when we could just not think about it.
Yeah.
We could just go, well, my default is, if I've got some money on me, it's yours. The same as my default would be, if I see a shop that sells Krispy Kremes, I'm probably going to get a Krispy Kreme, even though it's not good for me. I can't help it. If it's there, I'm going to get it. It's those defaults that we can be more conscious of, rather than, as said, rather than it be this huge thing of, I'm going to change my life in that I'm going to volunteer every week at a homeless shelter or this or that, because they're the kind of things that you can quite fairly say, I've got a family, I've not got time, or work's really hard at the moment, I need to cancel that. It doesn't have, if you've got time for big changes as well, then that's even better, but it can be these small incremental things. And I think that's what's overlooked a lot in
in society these days.
It's good habits, isn't it?
With
if you start getting into good habits, then so I started running round Victoria Park for the first time. I've never really done any running. And from here to there, it's about, I think it's about 5 kilometres. And then I started doing it and I was getting no exercise. So I did it in like 46 minutes and I had about 15 stops and I had to sit down halfway through. I had a bottle of water with me and then I've kept doing it. And then I've got the time down and time down and time down. And I just feel stronger as a person and it just makes me feel better than I was before I did the running, before I did the run. And that feeling of self-worth, I feel that if I can move that into other areas of just making me, if I can make myself into a better person, not just through fitness, but getting other habits in other areas of, I am going to be more open to sitting down and talking to people who are on the street and just trying to find out what their deal is. Because, you know, loneliness is such a massive thing. Like, imagine, you know, some people might have been to a festival and you're on your own or you lose your mates for a little bit of time and you don't know anyone. That's a massive... But imagine being in London and just like not knowing anyone and not having... Oh, God, man, it's just... I just know when I did the Glastonbury thing and I went there on my own because I was doing it for this poetry thing. And I thought, oh, it's Glastonbury. People are good there. They'll chat, you know, and stuff. And I tried to make some conversations with a few different groups, but because it's so hard to get tickets now, people go and they are invested in that group of mates that they've got.
Yeah, it's that experience that they've paid money for need to make the most out of.
It might be a massive generalisation. I'm sure there's people who have gone to Glastonbury and have made new friends there. But if I was going, I went on my own and I thought, no, actually, it feels kind of shut off. Mm. And so I thought, maybe I'm just not very good at speaking to new people. And it doesn't help when you're completely naked.
I mean, again, it's another example of, and not that this is a whole episode on homelessness, but I think it's a valid thing that's come up naturally here. It's another example of doing that rewind, of going, right, that isn't just a homeless person. That was at some point someone's child, and it was a small kid, and they were at school, and all of this. And there's been a journey to get here, and that's heartbreaking. And that's what we don't look at. It's the dehumanisation of people, I guess.
But it's
they're
the
a
same,
thing rather than a person.
Same as the elderly as well. Like, people I speak to say that, you know, once you get past a certain age, you do kind of become a bit invisible.
Yeah.
And people don't pay the attention, you know, if you're to walk into a pub when you're 25 or whatever. And it's just this thing of, like, humanity is so rich and in such all the different people and everything like that. And you're just like, oh, wow, but this planet is a fantastic, what, I can't believe it. Look at all these people. Look, and I've got it in my shows where I'm like, look at all these people there are to talk to. We never even said hello, did we? And it's like, I know that when you, because I spend a fair bit of time in the flat, like writing and stuff, or on trains where you're not really talking to anyone. I know that if I have a day where I speak to 5 different people on the telephone and have maybe like a 15-minute conversation, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
And just that thing and getting to people, just finding out how people are.
Yeah.
And just going, are you all right? And then just really trying to get down to it and create those moments of, how are you doing? You know, are you all right? Have you got anything you want to talk about? And just because that is where the feelings come from.
Yeah.
How you make people feel. And that is what it's all about for me in the shows and everything like that. So going back to your question was about the making people laugh or whatever. There's a famous quote of it. They won't remember. All that people remember is how you made them feel. Yeah. Like in a show, it's like, oh, whatever, if a piece of art or a flipping Christmas tree or whatever, make them feel something. If you can make them feel something, then, and I think that's it. There's so much more rememberable. Like I watch The Office and The Royal Family and Flowers and all that stuff. I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the moments where they make me feel something, not just laughing at a stapler in a load of jelly, you know.
Yeah. And that's good too.
It is.
It is the moments.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That make you feel, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's exactly that. I've probably said this a million times, but the podcast has been a huge thing for my own mental health because I'm not great at, I'm good at isolating myself. I'm not great at just making the effort to go out and have conversations with strangers or with whomever else. Yet the podcast means I have what averages out at an hour a week. But like, for example, I've recorded a different podcast each day for the last 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been really good conversations. And like my partner will say, like, how did they go? And I'll just be like, it was great. And I won't be able to pick anything specific out. But I was like, it was just such a nice conversation. It was really good to have that interaction and have that. So that, I mean, just it's a weird link now, but we should talk at some point about your podcast because it's exciting to me because it's not another interview podcast because there's a lot of them. I love them, but there's a lot of them. What is your podcast and what's kind of the motivation behind it?
The motivation behind it is me just wanting to share ideas that I've had with people.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of your, when you were talking about, you know, this capturing a moment in the photography, like you've always been big on that, haven't you? When you said, let's record a CD. And then there was a bit when you were talking about filming stuff and just making stuff, trying to capture these things.
Yeah. Document it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's there and this moment exists.
And I think that's what I have wanted to do with it is just get all this stuff that's in my notebooks and has been in the shows and stuff that didn't make it into the shows and stuff that I just like enough to want to share with people and just record it, put some music behind it sometimes, and then each episode is like 3 minutes, some are 6 minutes, and then hopefully I'll put on some like live recordings of previews I did that went all right or... Yeah. And it's just called the Rob Orton Daily Podcast.
And it's going to be literally daily, right?
Yeah, so it'll just be 3 minutes of just, you know, little ideas or some stories and some prose and just bits of writing that I like enough to want to get out there. And instead of it me trying to go and do a show for 3 minutes every day and traveling to it, I just... We'll record it and put it out there and that will be it, really.
I love it because, again, it's hard to not bring things back to the election constantly, but I think one of the biggest issues has been that is London. Is that London feels like, oh, everything's good. It's all so liberal and there's all these changes, but it's not reaching out to the outer reaches of the country. And it's a similar thing there. Even if you tour, it's in these big places. I love the idea of the reason I like podcasts is everyone anywhere can have them and listen to them and take them in. And they're for everyone. You don't have to. If you're someone who is in the middle of nowhere where no one ever tours, well, you can have this podcast still. You can't go to a live show, but you can have this. Or you're someone who's not comfortable at live events, who doesn't like crowds. Well, you can still have this. This is still for you. That's what excited me when you were saying about doing this. And the fact, again, I love the fact it's daily and it could be 2 minutes. It could be 10 minutes. I like that kind of, as weird as it sounds and negative as it sounds, I like the disposable nature of that.
Yeah.
The fact that it's just there, enjoy it if you want. It's not an hour-long show. An hour-long show has to have so much more value to you because you've built it and you've done this big thing. Whereas this, you can go, here's something. If one person likes it, cool. If no people like it, all right.
Yeah.
There's another one tomorrow. Hopefully 10 people will like that one.
Exactly.
And so on.
And I think it'll be maybe... Well, it's hopefully something that people can kind of listen to a few at a time.
Yeah.
But it's just a way of sharing something. It's like having a doing a painting, and instead of me just looking at it, trying to put it on the internet and seeing if people like it. And it's just a case of testing myself. And the main thing is that it's got me writing more, even though I've got to write another show. It's like, it's just, there is nothing creatively that I just love having a little idea, writing down, and it going somewhere else.
Yeah, I like it as an outlet, because I know that if you're so focused on a show, there's going to be stuff that comes to mind that you then would normally have to discard because it doesn't fit the show.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's got a home. It's like I can spend, even if it's spending 10 minutes on that, I can just see that thought I've had out to its fruition and go, there you go, that's not for the show, but it's happened and it's documented as such.
I think that's why I want it, just for it to be the Rob Orton Daily Podcast, is because I'd never want to feel that I've got to do anything in a certain way for anyone, and just try and be as free as I can be to, because that's what I wanted to feel like. I remember when I was in the, used to work in an art shop because I'd started doing gigs on the side, and then I was a stockroom assistant and worked on the shop floor in an art shop selling art supplies. And one morning we'd had this big delivery of canvas, and I was just crying in the morning thinking, I just want to do what I want to do. And I want to do it my way, and I want to do it, and I'm going to do it. And I was so frustrated. And it's the same with anything, you know, the Edinburgh shows. Okay, I'm going to do this show. I'm going to make it about crowds, and I'm just going to do it how I want to do it, and just try it and see if it's got any value, and not let people go, ah, no, you shouldn't do it like that. You should do it like this. And then that's for me to make that decision in 5 years' time when I look back at it and I can see my own mistakes. But if it feels right at the time, and I'm going at it, I'm going, yeah, and getting that kick of going, yeah, this feels good. And then you're going, right, do, and then you might look at it the day after and go, God, that was crap. What was I thinking about there? And it goes back to the whole risk of it all and like the fluidity of everything, and your brain doing this thing. Like, I've had my brain at the moment has started doing something where it feels like not vertigo, but I have these surges of, whoa, I thought I was going to pass out then.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm probably going to go and get checked out. But it's, I feel that we're made up of so much science, and science gets disproved every like five, you know, it, within, you know, people think something's real, and then 100 years time, they're like, oh my God, can you believe that they believe that?
Yeah.
And that's what makes me think that everything's up for grabs. And I think that's why I want to make stuff.
It completely is. I love that as well. And it's something I've been mainly learning about from my brother, because he's far cleverer than me. But as a teen, I this is a weird tangent, but it makes sense, I promise. As a kid, I went to a Catholic school. I was brought up as a Catholic. As a teen, I was like, religion is stupid. It's ridiculous. And I was anti it. And then I was just nonplussed about it. And in recent years, discussing stuff with my brother is that it makes me think, for example, the Ricky Gervais outlook of science is everything, religion is stupid. That's ignorant. And I love Ricky. I think he's great. But because the thing that my brother was talking about, again, number one, a lot of science came from religious scholars. They were the first to start thinking these outlandish things. But then science is so restricted. It's only in its own little section. And religion, again, not that I'm pro any religions or religious, but religion at least looks at the stuff that we can't explain with science. And something as stupid and simple as the soul. There is something. I don't know that I believe it's a soul, but it's something that science can't define. And there's so much that science can't define. You go to, like maths. Like the concept of 2 + 4. That's not a physical thing. 2 + 4, we're not talking about 2 apples + 4 apples. Just 2 + 4. It's not a physical, tangible thing. Yeah. It's something that's purely in our heads. And that's outside of science because we can't do that. But then equally, everyone says that maths is absolute. It's not, because infinity is endless. But infinity plus one is more than infinity.
Mm.
They're both endless, but that's more because it's plus one. So there's so much. It's like it is like there's so many areas that we can't explain with science, and that's where religion is exciting. But equally, art and philosophy and all these other things, that's where it's exciting because they can't say for certain that this is right or wrong, but they're going to have a go and they're going to think about it and try. And that's what I love about art is, as you were saying there, you can't know in this moment if this show is right, but you reckon it is and you're going to try it. Mm. And you might look back in 5 years, as you said, and go, I was wrong there, but you tried it. And it wasn't being tried anywhere else. No one else could do that. I had Kevin Smith on recently, and he spoke about his big realization in recent years was no one else is making Kevin Smith films.
Mm.
So why was he all of a sudden trying to make Hollywood films? He's like, he's the only person who can make Kevin Smith films. His argument was he's the only person who would want to make Kevin Smith films, but he's the only person who can. And that means it's important, whether you like them or not, following that vision of Rob Alton rather than a version of Rob Alton that someone has told you, well, what you need to do is you need to change this and turn this part up and turn that part down. It's like, well, it's anyone can do that.
Yeah.
Not anyone can do, you know, that singular vision.
But yeah, that's the only thing that we've got that's unique is yourself, isn't it? And it's like, talking about religion, I haven't really got into the fact that people believe different things, I think, is great.
Yeah.
But I haven't engaged with it for quite a long time. But there was a bit from the Bible the other day. Someone had quoted a bit of a verse, and I thought, God, that's great. That's, I think maybe because I've been reading so much about politics and things like that, this bit was a really good small section about life and just going back to what we were talking about, of trying to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, through exercise or being more giving or listening to people more. And I was like, wow, I can really see why, you know, it might not be off the table. I might get into it and be like, oh, actually,
yeah,
there's some really good lessons in this.
Yeah.
And even though that people have, you know, have written it, and this is, it's still writing by people, and I love writing.
Yeah.
And I love people having ideas and putting words together.
It's everything that becomes attached to all these things that you can instantly go, I don't approve of that. But that's not the core of it.
No.
If people started weird beliefs based around your hair show, it wouldn't change what the hair show was. It would change what these people have put into it and changed and done this. It's still... And again, I think you're completely right. The Bible, from what I remember, it's a bloody good bit of writing.
Mm, no, exactly.
it's a cracking bit of literature.
But it's the same with football. When people go and watch it, they don't... I know, you know, you have problems with hooliganism and things like that, but they take it for what it is, and it's, they go and buy into it. But really, it is just... It's like you say about maths and things like that. It's what we... humans are putting ourselves onto it and being like, yeah, this is us. This is what monkeys aren't doing this. This is us. It's like, this makes us more and we can feel this. It's about feeling things. It's difficult in maths, isn't it? Because it's like, people take numbers very seriously.
Yeah.
It's just like the whole thing with the time show. It's like, yeah, it's numbers and you better be on time. It's like, what? Yeah, well, this is what we do because we're humans and this is what we're like.
And it's one of the sections I loved of the time show where you did question pretty much the concept of time and watches and all of us agreeing on how it first came about to who decided what time it was and then everyone agreed to that. Yeah. All stuff like that. It's like, yeah, that's fucking mind-blowing. It's something that we just take for granted. It's like, oh, it's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
So who says?
Yeah.
Well, everyone...
I think that's
when did we all agree? I didn't sign into this.
Exactly.
I didn't agree to that.
But that's what makes me think we can all agree on that. Why can't we all agree on let's make this country better for everyone? I think it's because, I don't know if I've got an answer for that. But I do think that when you see that and see the you're walking down the street and you're like, wow, there's loads of, or in the supermarket, you're like, look at all these wine bottles that are still on the shelf. No one's taken them off and smashed them. There's loads of car windows that aren't getting broken.
Yeah.
It can actually be quite good and people can be like, oh yeah, they're all right. Yeah, this is all quite in order. And I think we've evolved to this point where we're actually, everything's so ordered. I was thinking yesterday when the election, I was like, okay, so it's the election today, but the Queen might die as well. And, you know, Taylor Swift might die today as well. And I was like, isn't it strange how everything just seems to be quite laid out?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yesterday
could have properly kicked off.
Yeah.
Not just with the election, but there could have been loads of like carnage somewhere or like just like a massive, it's just, I was like, wow, actually, it seems to be quite calm.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And we don't like it when it's not though. Cause like I always use the example, and I joke about it, but I always say that I'm convinced that 2016 didn't actually happen.
I know.
And it's all just changed. And it's all gone off because Prince died, Bowie died, Brexit happened, Trump got elected. Just so much stuff in that that's like, no, that's not how it goes. That's not how it goes. There was so much in 1 year that I was like, nah. I'm not having it. This didn't happen. This is nonsense. There was too much that broke that order that you're speaking of, that kind of order of here's how things go, good or bad, here's how things go. There was so much that was like just so far out of that it was like, what? I'm not sure about this year.
Yeah, man.
I'm not sure if that really happened.
It's, yeah.
It's confused. Anyway, I'll start to wrap things up as we've got over an hour now. Another thing that I like about the idea of your podcast is that it's like a year-long advent calendar. And I really like advent calendars. At the moment, I've got a Reese's peanut butter cup advent calendar that I saw on, who posted it? Oh, my partner's mate Flick posted it on Instagram, and I was instantly like, I need one of them.
Yeah.
And I don't have an advent calendar every year, but I saw this one, I was like, I need that in my life. And it's genuinely a thing that gives me joy each day at the moment. I'll go, oh, it's, I normally open it in the evening for some reason as my little end of day treat. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have my little, my thing. So what I wanted to ask you, as I think it's a good place to kind of end on, is what things bring you joy at the moment in your life? There's, again, we could talk for hours about the things that are stressing us out, particularly with the election and whatever, but what things bring you joy, as small as they are or as big as they are? We spoke before about, like, I get genuine joy playing FIFA at the moment because I'm not good at leisure, and FIFA I found is a way that I can switch off. I'll have a podcast on in the background, and I'll just play a game for, even if it's half an hour, it just gives me that little hit. So yeah, what brings you joy, Rob Alton?
Well, I think I'm in a relationship at the moment where a part of the joy of that is like having conversations and just that, really. Maybe thinking that something's going to go somewhere and having a bit of hope.
Yeah.
And I love running. Now, even though it's awful and it kills me, what gives me joy? I don't know. I do feel like I'm getting to know my parents in a different way. It's weird. I was speaking to someone the other day, and Laurie from Banks of the Gun, and it was like, you know, people say life's short, but it feels quite long to
me. I agree. I think it feels really long.
And I'm like, God, I'm enjoying it at the moment. But also, I do find it, you know, we're talking about joy, aren't we? So it's, I think...
it's a tough question to spring, but I think it's relevant because I think it's something that we don't think about much. I think it's really easy to focus on the bad things in the world. I spoke about this with my partner recently, that she was saying how shit it is that this is happening or that is happening. And I was like, but someone in the world has just had a pizza delivered, and it's a really good pizza, and they really wanted it, and it's not been a shit one. It's one that they've opened it and gone, oh, this looks like a fucking great pizza. And we don't think about the small bits of joy or the big bits of joy. And I think it's partly a social media thing, but I think that's one of the problems. So,
well, we live opposite Lidl, and going in there and getting vegetables for a decent price.
Yeah.
Having an unscathed session on the self-service checkout where there's no snags on it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Getting like a clean run. It's almost like, yes, going back to the Takeshi's Castle thing. But I love that. And it's, yeah, I think one of the best things is I'm working with the producer, Ben, on the podcast. And when we do things and we're putting music behind it, and when that clicks, I'm like, oh, yeah, God, I like that. And that's good. I don't know. I'm getting joy from, I mean, I'm 37 now.
Yeah.
And I can feel myself changing, like my hair is thinning out. And I look at myself and I'm like, well, I've kept myself alive for this long. I should be quite proud of myself for that. But then sometimes I did a gig the other night and I was like, I think I might be the oldest person, innit? That is mad. Yeah. When that starts happening.
Yeah.
Because I look at people on the TV and I think, oh, I wonder what I'll be like when I'm their age. I wonder if I'll have achieved what they've achieved. And then you look it up and they're like 31.
Yeah, I have it constantly. It seems like a weird one, but with me and my brother watch the UFC a lot.
Yeah.
And fighters just feel older than they are. We'll watch someone and be like, it was only a few years back that we started doing this regularly, but it'll be like, he's 6 years younger than me. And I'll be like, he's four years younger than me. And he's a veteran who we've watched for years.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, how has that happened?
But I think I'm getting a certain amount of, you've got to get joy in the fact that, you know, if you can overcome the demons of going, oh, I don't want to get old. I feel that if I can master that and just go, yeah, I do actually.
Yeah.
Because what's the alternative? And all these people who are 18, it's like, I've done that. I've been there. I've got there and I've lived for twice as long as that. I've done this. I've kept drinking water. I've kept eating. I've kept myself alive. And like, you know, when these people who are much older than that, it's like, good on you. And it should be celebrated. And these people, I know that it's like, yeah, it's so stuff like that. You've got to try and find joy where you can find it. And it's like, just, yeah.
Surviving, I completely agree. A mate of mine had their birthday recently, and they were really glum because they were like, "Oh, I'm 28 or something like that," and I'm 38, so I've got a year on you. But on that, I was like, "I'm excited every time I get older now." Because again, like with yourself, in the year between 36 and 37, you've created a completely new show and you've performed it, and it's meant something to people. That's great. That means aging is a good thing because you're doing something and it's continuing. We've not talked about acting at all, but acting has changed my outlook on aging as well, because the stuff I've learned in my first 4 years of acting, I feel I've improved hugely. And it makes me really excited to think, imagine 10 years time, imagine how much better I'll be and how much I will have learned. And then imagine 20 years time, because I'm the same previously and there is still a bit of it. I've not looked at life like that. The thing I've related to the most was when you kind of paused on the idea of life's too short. Because I've had exactly that. At about 24 or 25, I was like, I don't know if I can do another 24, 25 years of this. And that'll just be 50. Like, that feels like a long time.
Yeah.
And even now, 38, I'm like, if I maintain health, I've got possibly as much as I've already lived to go still. And that scares me and feels exhausting. I think I fear life a lot more than I fear death. Because again, that just feels like, that's such a long time. I'm quite tired now.
But that's a lyric, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel life more than I feel death. Oh, it sounds like it
Yeah.
But that's definitely it. That's why, you know, that's why when I put that thing on, that's my favourite clock on the Underground. It was a picture of the Underground clock. And there wasn't any numbers on it. And there was just Underground signs. And you put, it's always Underground the clock.
Yeah.
It's like,
it is.
That's why. But but I tell you what, that thing about getting older, and what I cannot get my head around is how time speeds up the older you get. Billy Connolly's got a whole thing about it, hasn't he? Where it's like, this is my day, and he acts it out. Birthday is the do-do-do-do-do, all doing his little dances, whatever. And it's a brilliant bit, but I think that the time does feel like it speeds up. But if you just watch a clock all day, it's going to be boring. But what it makes me want to do is try and put more into each day. Then when it's speeding up and life's getting quicker and quicker and quicker, you're still going to have as much work when you look back at it. It's just that it will have felt like it's gone quicker. Whereas, and so you can make a pile of stuff, but it feels like it's gone quicker. But as long as you subscribe to each day and you're like, right, I've got this. But then, you know, your body starts, it's harder to do stuff and you're like, yeah. But then I look at, you know, like Ivor Cutler, and when I saw that with Prince Philip, and he was 90, how old was he when he crashed his car? Like 90 or something?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to be having to drive when I'm 90. Have I really got to live for that long? But anyway.
Anyway, I'll wrap things up there. What is there anything else that you want to tell people about? Obviously, the Rob Orton Daily Podcast is going to be out now at this point. It will have been out for a while. There could be a good load for people to get their teeth into.
Yeah.
Social media and whatnot. Are you a fan of it, or are you... Is it a love-hate?
It is a bit of a love-hate thing. I am on it, at Robert Orton, and at Rob Orton, and it's all on there. At Rob Orton Daily Podcast is the Twitter and the Instagram. It's a difficult beast, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, I'm going on tour from February until June, doing a lot of gigs of this Time Show one.
And as I said, I can wholeheartedly recommend that. I called it at the Fringe, and it was one... This year was the first year that I wasn't even at the Fringe really for a full day yet. I was so pleased I managed to catch you. I caught Rich Wilson and I caught one or two others, I think. But yeah, I wholeheartedly recommend it as a show to get out to.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for... I remember, the first time that you got me on the Bestival.
Oh, I've got that as a note that it's my favourite Bestival moment. Because I know that you were nervous about it because you were headlining the amphitheatre I booked. I knew that you were nervous about it. I was confident, but also I knew that I'd seen you do hour-long shows and all I could give you was like 30 minutes. I was like, is this going to work? And you just came out and I won't do your opening thing, but it was your ladies and gentlemen introduction and the joy... In everyone, I was backstage, so I was looking at the crowd. The joy in the whole amphitheatre, that's in the woods outside. From that moment, you had him, and it gave me so much joy because I knew that you were nervous about it. I was fairly confident, but didn't know because it's not an hour show; it's not this lock thing. And yeah, I bloody loved it.
Well, that's what it's about, isn't it? Trying to make those moments and putting the work in so that you can just. Because everyone's working so hard.
Yeah.
I want to work hard and just go at it, give it some. Well, we still can, really.
I love it. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Pleasure.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Rob Orton. He's great, isn't he? I hope you enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that conversation. As you will have heard, there was a few different things there that we kind of came to some realisations. It was we almost cancelled the podcast. I messaged Rob to say, do you want to do this? Because the election hits people in different ways. And... I didn't want it to be a moody or reactionary or whatever else episode, and it wasn't. I'm really glad that we did it. I got a parking fine because I parked in the Audi car park, and I thought I'd get away with it, but I didn't get away with it. So that was a shame. So, you know, this podcast cost me a bit, but it's worth it, I think you'll agree. As I said, subscribe to the Rob Orton Daily Podcast. You will have heard a bit at the start, and now you will now have just heard, you know, an hour of how that wonderful man's brain works. I think he's great. I want to see Rob writing and creating TV shows. I want to see him acting and portraying characters in TV shows. I want to see him doing everything, and I want to see him continuing to do his amazing fringe shows and tour shows. So yeah, there's Rob. Go and follow him. Go and do all the things. Subscribe to his amazing podcast because it's truly wonderful. And I'll be back next week with another Rob, Robert Eggers. Hugely excited about this one. The director of The Witch and the director of The Lighthouse. Yeah. He's great. It was a really good conversation. It's the most nervous I've been about a podcast because I was intimidated because I think he's wonderful and I've never met him, but we hit it off. So, yeah, there we go. I will see you all next week. Thank you for tuning in. Go and get your teeth into the Rob Orton Daily Podcast. You can binge the years so far, probably in the length it would take you to listen to one episode of the Joe Rogan Experience or any other long podcast or mine. Actually, he's probably only put out an hour's worth, so what are we 22 days in, 21 22, so yeah, that's only going to be 40 minutes, maybe 90 minutes. Anyway, that's not an interesting bit of maths. I'll see you next week. Ta-ta.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.